What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come. FanDuel, I'm your host, Sean Kane, coming to you on a Thursday, August 17th. 10 baseball games today, but Twitter is already ablaze with this conversation, and I have to completely agree with what people are saying. Just stupid arrangement of slates by FanDuel. Like, just dumb. You get three games for the 1 o'clock slot, and you have two random games at 3 o'clock, and then you have the main slate with five games. Can we not just have two five-game slates? What's the point? I don't understand why we can't include these 3 o'clock games, these West Coast games, at the early slate. It makes it way more playable, way more appealing, way more interesting. You end up with a three-game slate where 40% of ownership is on one player, and you have absolutely zero game theory unless you just want to play, you know, the dumbest. It just is, it's not engaging for players. I have to think some of the logic, the conversation goes to, they want to make sure that contests close so people can play the main slate. Listen, you're going to be able to generate more high quality engagement from your base with five full games on the early slate. I'm not fucking playing the early slate with three games. I'm not. And I'm playing light on an evening slate with five games. That's fine. There's only five games tonight after 7 p.m. That makes sense. But on a light slate, on a light slate like that, there's really no reason to play. It's not fun. It's not fun. No one from FanDuel is listening, but I know other people feel this way. So I'm not touching the early slate, not to mention the fact that the early slate has like just absolutely monstrous offensive opportunities for almost everyone. Arizona, Houston, Cincinnati, Chicago. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to watch. It's good baseball to watch, but it's not fun to play on FanDuel. Last night was fun. A whole lot of fun. Texas stack blows up. Awesome. That was great. Really pleased with that. Yu Darvish blows up. That was interesting. Stroman definitely became basically the best pitcher, the safest option. He was dealing last night, had a nice game. Of course, the Rays are swinging at, you know, beach balls. They just can't hit any decent pitcher these days. You can't we're at the point now where you can stream any pitcher with above a 20% strikeout rate or below a 4 xFIP against the Rays because they're just going to swing. They're going to swing at everything. And so Stroh was really, really solid. Of course, if you had cores, you exploded. Trevor Story double dong. It only happens at home. It can only happen there. Mike Fultonevich can't even get out of the first inning. Cubs, of course, that was a good game. The Cubs, Cincinnati game and the Boston St. Louis game, really good spots. And I think, you guys hear me talk about, leverage and pivoting and finding lower ownership all the time. And the one thing I will say is attacking low owned players. Like last night, I went after Carlos Rodon. I went all in on Carlos Rodon. And point per dollar, he was perfectly fine. Now, he didn't generate as many strikeouts as I was hoping. I think the Dodgers probably were wary of the fact that he had been, kind of on a tear recently. And, tried to keep their bats in check, right? Not give him too many strikeouts opportunities and show some discipline. But the logic there isn't necessarily that Rodon was a better play than Darvish. Like, on paper, Darvish was the best play on the slate, no doubt about it. I mean, can you predict the fact that he's going to get an early exit? No. But what you're playing is the chances that there is, every once in a while, the chance that a pitcher like that, for whatever reason, gets hit, gets little walks, he shows some control issues, manager decides to pull him in the fifth. At which point the bottom falls out of that person's lineup, and all of a sudden your ability to not have them gives you that massive edge. It is less likely than Yu Darvish goes out and fans a ton of batters. But it is a possibility, and you're playing that possibility that you benefit from chaos, right? Which is just the anti-fragility. And if you've ever read anything about GPP lineups and anti-fragility, that's precisely what it is, right? Benefiting from things going wrong for other people, which sounds really vicious. But hey, in fantasy sports, it's not that big of a deal. anyway, if you know that, sorry, being repetitive. If you didn't know that, then now you know. Happy to talk to you more about it if you want to hit me up with a question there. Hey, listen, we got 5 games, so I'm going to break them down anyway because I think it could be a fun slate. You know, there's some like bad team offenses that could be fun to play here in some leverage spots, so I'm into it. I can get into that. You know, it could end up only being a 4-game slate, no doubt about it. So let's go ahead and jump in. Let's take a look at what we've got on this evening main slate. Okay, so I said it could be only 4 games, and the reason that it could be only 4 games is the first game of the night, St. Louis, Pittsburgh, has a whole lot of rain in the forecast that gets worse as it goes along. 25% chance of thunderstorms starting at first pitch, then it jumps up to 50% after that. You know, we saw the Minnesota-Cleveland game get postponed last night, and I didn't even emotionally invest in that game. I wasn't going to look at it. I wasn't even, the weather looked so bad throughout, and it was, you know, it's thunder and lightning too, so you add that, it's raining all day, thunder and lightning, that's a recipe for disaster. So I didn't even touch that game. I didn't look at it. This one doesn't look as bad, but it just isn't a very appealing game on paper. The Cardinals versus a lefty, yes, they got to E-Rod. I just had the wrong half of the lineup last night. I was pissed. I had the top of the lineup. I didn't have the bottom. The bottom were the ones who cracked it open early against E-Rod. Cardinals against Taillon, not really. Jameson Taillon here favored 4.8 runs for the Pirates, 4.1 for St. Louis against Wainwright. Are the Pirates going to get to Wainwright? Yeah, maybe. But when the Pirates get to somebody, it's to the tune of 4 or 5 runs. Like, there's not a lot of home run upside in PNC. This game doesn't inspire a whole lot of confidence in me. You know, and the Cardinals, as fun as they are to roster these days when people overlook them, those situations are in guys who, you know, with guys who allow a whole lot of contact. Taillon against righties is filthy. He's kind of in play here. But with the weather, you may not want to play him. So I think that game may just be a cross off. Yankees-Mets continues 7 runs. Only 7 runs in Citi Field. Vegas is saying These teams aren't that good right now. This is a super low total for the Yankees against a pitcher in Steven Matz, who, I mean, all year long has struggled against righties. Like, he really has. I can't really determine. I mean, I guess it's just that the Yankees have been kind of mediocre against lefties lately. But Yankees right now only projected for 4 runs against Steven Matz, who is a 400 wOBA against right-handers. I mean, Aaron Judge and Todd Frazier, right? You should be able to do something here. But yeah, I mean, the Yankees offense not looking too powerful these days, struggling a little bit. Citi Field, ballpark downgrade. You'd probably see this total at 5 runs for them if it was Yankee Stadium. But of course, we know Citi Field. Certainly not the home run park that Yankee Stadium is. The Mets only for 2.9 runs here. Makes good sense. Severino, the human flamethrower on the mound. Dude is, even this late in the season, his four-seamer is getting up to 98.4 degrees. Degrees. Fucking idiot. Miles per hour. Idiot. Did I catch a niner in there? Were you calling from a walkie-talkie? Hopefully somebody knows what I was talking about. White Sox Rangers, 11 runs projected in Texas. And when the Rangers at home in this time of the year, we have to play them. They just can't stop scoring double digit runs at home. They are so good at home. You know, Andrews filthy last night. Beltre homers, Gallo homers. I mean, it does exactly what he wanted to do. Mazzara homers. Four home runs from the Rangers. It's just crazy how well they play at home. You have some really interesting pricing on these guys today, too. You know, no one over 4K, or excuse me, only Beltre over 4K. And one through nine in play. I'm not kidding, against Reynaldo Lopez. Now, Reynaldo, young guy, good pitcher, prospect, 23-year-old. You know, he's good. He has hard contact issues, like a lot of hard throwing righties do. And he is playing in, you know, 90-degree weather in Texas against a team that is red hot right now against righties. Not to mention, he's going to have a pitch limit. And then you get that fucking bullpen for the White Sox, which is just a human dumpster fire. Rangers, White Sox. Tyson Ross is pitching for the Rangers. He's also really bad at baseball. So we are definitely in love with the White Sox, who are just so fun. Like, just giant killers right now. I just love the idea that I get to play White Sox all over the place tonight. Like, I love that. So I'm all in on the White Sox tonight. Nationals, Padres, 8.5 runs projected in San Diego. Ballpark downgrade for the Sticks here. The Nationals struggling. You know, just not a lot of pop, you know, which I hate to say this, but Nationals playoff implosion is pending, guys. Let's just be very clear about this. They're pitching Edwin Jackson against the Padres, who he's actually had a couple good starts here recently. We know Edwin Jackson, man. Journeyman. He is literally played for everyone in Major League Baseball. Julius Chacin on the other side. He's good at home, but he's bad against lefties. Problem is you don't have all the lefties that you once had. I mean, you really only have, you're going to have Brian Goodwin, Daniel Murphy, Adam Lind. That's it. Those guys are definitely in play. The Nats lefties against Chacin, but the rest of the offense has been pretty, pretty rough lately. So I don't know how much Nationals I want, especially when they are not favored against the Padres. That's an ominous sign if you're a Nationals fan. Padres, they're getting 4.3 runs. Julius Chacin, against Edwin Jackson here. Hell yeah, I'm going to play the Padres. Love the I just love playing these shitty teams. And just being like, let's go. Come on, give me a home run at 3%. And just a lottery ticket. It's fun. is it good decision-making? I'm not sure. Don't press me on that. But yeah, I'm going to stack the Padres. Padres, White Sox stack. Let's do it. Phillies, Giants, 7 runs projected in San Francisco. This game could be terrible. Aaron Nola versus Jeff Samardzija. San Francisco's favored, but they're only getting 3.6 runs. I mean, it's hard to project the Giants to ever score more than 4 runs these days. They've been just terrible. And Aaron Nola has been excellent, and he is the highest priced pitcher on the slate. That'll tell you a lot about this one, huh? But dude has been filthy. Three of his last 5 starts over 50 points. And one of those was over 40 points. Just an absolutely great pitcher. Like, God, I hope the Phillies like get Machado and Trout. How fun would that be, right? All of a sudden, you know, you have a couple mediocre pitchers and you just have all of the home runs in Citizens Bank Park. Like, just balls leaving everywhere. Or Stanton, right? Stanton and Machado in Philadelphia. I don't know. Okay. So that's it, man. Let's dive into these 5 games. Not pretty, but we're doing it. All right. So pitcher breakdown. Severino. I don't really need to say anymore. I'm going to probably play Severino everywhere. Listen, the Mets on the year are average at best. Yes, I was in on Jaime Garcia. I don't know why he can't strike out anyone. I mean, I do know why he can't strike out anyone. He's an old man who likes ground balls. Like, he's not a strikeout pitcher. That's why he can't strike anyone, Sean. But he's not striking anyone out on these Yankees teams. It was annoying. He had one good inning, and I was like, okay, a couple strikeouts. Now we're going to get a couple more. We're going to get a quality start. Now he just loses his control, and they yank him. Annoying. But Severino shouldn't be in that spot. Okay, their average on the year at best, 28% strikeout rate for him, 12% swinging strike rate. Really good control, below average walk rate, only 30% fly ball rate in an already massive ballpark. That's great. 29% hard contact. He's really good. He throws the ball really hard. 3.1 xFIP. To be able to throw the ball that hard and put it on the spot and not walk anyone is just such a freaking talent. It's so cool. He got in trouble in his last two games, okay? Quality start against Cleveland, but he struggled mightily against Boston. Sort of makes sense, right? Plate discipline, contact team, small ballpark, all that kind of stuff. And not to mention they know his pitch profile. They see him and how many times a year. So I get it. I'm not thinking the Mets are the same. You know, you have an NL ballpark that's massive. You get all that advantage, right? The only bat that scares me against this kind of velocity is Conforto. Right. Maybe Cespedes gets one into his wheelhouse and can send it. But those are the only guys. And Granderson's not going to turn on this ball. You know, I mean, it's just not going to happen. Maybe the young guys, I guess, you know, Dom Smith, maybe. But Dom Smith and maybe Rosario, I guess they could get to one because, you know, the young guys just have better bat speed. But I just I'm not really scared of the Mets right now. We know they're willing to swing. We know, you know, Sonny Gray had a great outing against them. So I'm good with the Mets here in this situation. So long as Severino can get the run support and get into the sixth, which like Vegas is a little bit iffy about, which kind of freaks me out. But I can do it. I think he's probably the best pitcher on the slate. I tried to find a comp, by the way, to like figure out, okay, right-hander with gas by gas, I mean like over 95 miles an hour. It's really only Scherzer. He's the only other right-hander that the Mets have seen this year that has like serious high quality talent, serious high quality fastball and a slider. Scherzer torches the Mets and torches the good Mets with Jay Bruce and Neil Walker and, all those guys. So like Scherzer like has put up 50, 60 burgers on them. Now is Severino Scherzer? No, but I think that there's something to be said there about a high quality right-hander with a four seamer and a slider, you know, and that's what Severino is. And that's what Scherzer is. So I'm into it. I think the middle tier is interesting now. And I'd say Nola is middle tier just because like my mental math tells me that he's middle tier. But we got to talk about Samardzija and Nola. These two are like doing like a Freaky Friday situation. Like they're the same guy. Like look at their FanDuel pictures. They have like long curly brown hair. And Samardzija in the first half of the season had like a 28% strikeout rate. And now he has like a 21% strikeout rate. Nola had a 20% strikeout rate. Now he has a 28% strikeout rate. Listen, the Shark has the upside appeal of the Phillies. Sure. We've tried to pitch the Shark in a lot of situations against high strikeout teams. He just undoes all of his good work by allowing way too much contact in like three runs every single game. He's going to give up three runs minimum, and he may pitch seven innings. Great. But it's so annoying to have a pitcher who every single time you start him, he gives up runs and gives up contact. And it just, for whatever reason, Samardzija just can't figure out which pitches people don't hit. And, you know, I'm not completely sure. His strikeout rate has dropped in his last three starts. he is, his second half K rate is down to 21%. Yes, at home he pitches to contact. He allows more ground balls at home, 0.7 home runs per nine. He uses the ballpark to his advantage. His hard contact rate goes down. His medium and soft contact rate go way up. Are you going to see home runs? Probably not. But given the possible lack, I mean, all the strikeout upside from the Phillies, you're like, ooh, maybe the Shark could get me seven strikeouts. Well, erase three of those because you know he's going to give up three runs, and then erase one or two of those because you know he's giving up depressed, or excuse me, he just has a depressed K rate in general right now, and he's going to pitch to contact in San Francisco. Okay, so am I going to take a pitcher who is going to get me six earned runs, or excuse me, six innings, three earned runs, and five strikeouts? No, I don't, there's no upside in that. I mean, there's a floor, there's a 20-point floor, but a 20-point floor doesn't win you anything these days. So I like Nola. Nola is going in the opposite direction. Like I said, he's been filthy lately. 28% in the second half this year, K rate. He gets a team that won't swing, but he gets a team that sucks. 18% strikeout rate for them. I don't care. He's going to pound the fastball and the curve. The Giants are bad against every pitch. It doesn't matter what you throw, but they're really bad against the fastball. And Nola threw it 60% of the time last game against the Padres. It's clearly clicking for him. It's clearly generating swinging strikes. Do I worry about the upside? Yes, but I don't worry about any runs. He's been getting quality starts like it's his job. Do I know if he's going to get the win? I'm not sure. You know, the Phillies bats could really do some work here against Samardzija, but they haven't shown the pop that we like were attacking, you know, in that little quick stretch when they were at home on this road trip. They just haven't been, they haven't been there. They look really bad in that San Diego series. So does he get the win? I'm not sure, but does he go seven innings and possibly get you six Ks with, you know, limited runs against this bad team? Yeah. Yeah, I think he does. So I'm into Nola. I think you could definitely pitch Nola if you want to be a little bit different and pivot off of Severino, because Severino will probably generate the most ownership because he's just the most known commodity, I think. The other guy that I don't mind is Jameson Taillon. You know, he just has been good lately. He's had two really good games back to back, and he got my attention this morning because Vegas just hammered him. In a really good way. He just got massive love from Vegas, reverse line movement instantly. That total for the Pirates jumped. They got a lot of love. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he is filthy against right-handers, and you're going to see pretty much only two lefties in this lineup in Fowler and Carpenter, who in this gigantic ballpark don't really scare you that much. Shitty weather, gigantic ballpark, tie on against a ton of, you know, six, seven righties. I think it's good. I mean, he has had back-to-back starts with over 40 fantasy points, very solid. At home, he's a 2-to-1 ground ball, the fly ball guy. He uses the park there. And against right-handers, he's got a 26% strikeout rate with only like a 4% walk rate. So, you know, if he gets the right-hander swinging, Taillon is in a good spot. I think you get a quality start at the minimum at him. What's the K upside? I think it's five. Let's call it five plus. So I don't mind Jameson Taillon. I think that there is merit, however, in I'm going to say it, right? You got to kind of, you guys know now. You're going to get some pitcher hot takes these days, right? Late in the season, we're going for leverage. We're going for low ownership. Edwin Jackson, baby. All right. I get it. You're skeptical. Jackson has delivered three really good starts. 6 Ks, 8 Ks, 5 Ks. And in August, the dude has a 28% strikeout rate. I mean, we know the pedigree, right? I mean, this guy has been just like the greatest disappointment of the millennium. Like, he was just constantly moved around, like signed to massive numbers and then just let everybody down. And, you know, okay, sorry, Edwin Jackson. You know, I don't know. He has the pedigree. He's got the velocity. He's got, you know, fastball slider guy, which, you know, is perfect against the Padres. That's where they struggle. But God, he has contact issues. Elevated wOBA to both sides of the dish, hard contact to both sides of the dish, fly ball guy. You know, you get a big ballpark here. But he's been pretty solid, you know. Not to mention, okay, this guy is going to be, you know, this is a salty veteran, right? Against a young team, if he gets them swinging, I think he can keep them swinging. That said, you can also stack the Padres. So maybe you do both, right? Edwin Jackson, and then you stack the Padres in another line. But if you want a pitcher that's going to be low-owned who could surprise everyone, I think Edwin Jackson might be that guy. And Vegas doesn't agree with me, but, you know, what are you going to do? He had 8 Ks against, who did he have 8 Ks against? Was it the Cubs? No, the Cubs are the ones that got to him. It was somebody. Let me look this up here. Edwin Jackson had 8 strikeouts. He struck out 5 batters on San Francisco. He had 8 strikeouts. Yeah, he had 8 strikeouts against the Cubs. Only 5 innings, and he gave up 4 earned. But, he did have 8 strikeouts. 6 strikeouts against Colorado. Similarly impotent offense. I don't care what you say. I hate the Rockies. They're just annoying. The Rockies are annoying. All right, sticks. We got to talk about the sticks. Pretty obvious. It's August. It's Arlington. It's the Rangers at home against a righty. Okay, there it is. They're getting Reynaldo Lopez. You know, the kid is good, right? But like we said, we know his pitch count is going to be limited. He is a hard-throwing righty who has hard contact issues. Surprise, surprise. Young guy, difficulty limiting contact. His strikeout appeal. He's going to have the ability to strike people out. This isn't Anibal Sanchez. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, this team is going to be better than this 23-year-old pitcher. And if it's a day that's ending in Y and it's August of 2017, I'm going to roster Joey Gallo. I think the only reason that I might not roster Joey Gallo is because I like Jose Abreu just as much. And he's way cheaper. The one thing it's going to be hard to peg down is these Rangers lineups, the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. It's like, why does the lineup change every fucking time? And it's not just in the platoon splits. Like, you just throw people like Gallo's in the 5 hole. Nope. Gallo's in the 6 hole. Odor's in the 3. Odor's in the 8. It just, like, I don't understand it. It annoys me. DeShields might lead off again. I don't know. Carlos Gomez might be sick again. I don't know. We'll see. Keep an eye on the Texas lineup. I think you have to exploit that because using the lineup, I think, is where you're going to be capable of finding ownership leverage. And for me, I was shocked last night that Nomar Mazara was the lowest owned Ranger that I could find. Okay. Didn't make sense. He's batting 5 against Anibal Sanchez. We know he can hit righties. It didn't make sense that he has home run upside, like 200 plus ISO. I didn't get it, but it's an indication of the fact that if you full stack a team, you're going to find variance. 2, if you full stack a team and you are willing to play people 5 and below, you're going to probably find depressed ownership on those guys, right? Okay. The whole world played Andrews and Beltre. Great. How many people played Gallo and Mazara and even Chirios? Bob Chirios, man. Bob Chirios was filthy last night. 2 back-to-back 20-point games in the 9 hole. Hell yeah, I'll take that. I made this note. This team has been so productive of late at home that rostering those guys below the 5 hole creates it neutralizes the problem that you have with normally have with a batter who is that low in the order. Normally, you don't want to roster those guys that low because you're saying, well, what? How many plate appearances am I going to get? I could only get three. But when they're creating that many base runners, Odor had five plate appearances last night in the eight hole. That's unheard of. That's unheard of. Five plate appearances is why you roster a batter in the one hole. So if you're getting five plate appearances for a discount, I think you take it and you understand how valuable this offense is at creating runs. So Rangers obviously will be very, very popular. The Yankees versus Mets, I think, are interesting. You know, have they been good against lefties recently? Not really. Are they, you know, a massive threat to put up 10 runs? I haven't seen it in a while. But Mats has a problem with right-handers, and there are some pieces that I could get into. Obviously, Aaron Judge, don't need to tell you that he's capable of hitting home runs. You know, but if he doesn't hit a home run, it's not like they're, like, you know, getting base runners and knocking down around doubles and taking walks. Like, he better hit a home run for you. Like, you're paying that much money on the, you know, 20% chance that Aaron Judge hits a home run. I also don't mind Aaron Hicks and Todd Frazier as two cheap options. I think Todd Frazier specifically, I think, is in a good spot tonight as a righty against Mats. He could find himself in the five hole at 3-4. He's kind of be kind of an overlooked third baseman position. And I think Todd Frazier, you know, I mean, the numbers on the year, the veteran guy, he's capable. He may not hit one out. I don't know. I think he's only hit one home run as a Yankee. But, you know, I mean, he's ice cold. Oh, man. But he does have home run upside. Good gracious, Todd Frazier. Are Yankees fans nervous? I'm interested. Are you guys nervous about this team? Like, are the two most nervous contenders the Yankees and the Nationals right now? Because the Nationals aren't even, you can't even say the Nationals are contenders with the injuries and the, I mean, no Strasburg, no Murphy, no Eaton. You know, this team, just poor guys. I wonder if the Yankees fans are nervous. They got to be nervous. Just what's going on with this team? You know, especially with the way the Red Sox are playing right now and the Indians. And the Astros, by the way, are back from the quote-unquote dead, that two-week down spell that they had. So, yeah. Yankees, I think there's merit to the Yankees. I don't see the four-run total. Mats, like I said, 400 wOBA allowed to right-handers. The problem is the rest of the lineup isn't going to really do anything. So I don't know. Maybe they're a one-off target, really. All right. I don't have a grout stack. There's no in-between cost offense, but I have three offenses that are shitty teams that I like that I think you're playing with the Rangers tonight. Philadelphia versus the Shark, great leverage spot. People will play the Shark because it's Philadelphia, and they see Philadelphia, and they see strikeout upside, and he could, you know, hey, he could roast them. Fine, great. They're not my favorite of the bad team stacks, but you guys know I have a soft spot for Philadelphia. Left-handers, definitely better than their right-handers, or excuse me, definitely better against right-handers than they are against left-handers. We're seeing that he's given up contact. We're seeing he's given up multiple runs in every game. We know he has a depressed K rate right now. So yeah, you can go to the lefties here, you know, Herrera, Nick Williams, Freddy Galvis. I like those guys, especially if they're 1-5. Rhys Hoskins is in there, but, you know, Rhys Hoskins is really a lefty masher. So, yeah, Philly is cheap. They're going to be under-owned. They're on the West Coast, the visiting team. All of that will contribute to the fact that they're not going to get a lot of ownership. So they're great. A great exposure to them is just a great leverage play. San Diego versus Jackson, I said you could pitch Jackson as a flyer, but you can also stack against him. Massive elevated wOBAs to both-handedness. The Padres are always, always fun to stack because, you know, if they get going, they're going to hit some home runs, and it's, you know, it's kind of fun. So I would go straight to the top here. I go, you know, Margot, Asuaje, Perella, Solarte, but please do not leave out Corey Spangenberg. Dude is 3.9K. Why, you ask? And will anyone pay 3.9K for a Padre? No. So I'm all in on paying 3.9K for Corey Spangenberg. Four home runs in his last four games, a hit in every game since the Cincinnati series, and five multi-hit games in his last 10. Are you kidding me? This guy's great. And he's got Jackson as a lefty, problems with lefties, tendency to give up home runs. And Spangenberg's been hitting the ball out in Petco. He's clearly got stuff. So no one's going to pay 3.9K for him when you can go to Beltre for 4.3 or Todd Frazier for 3.4. Give me Spangenberg. Spanking the ball. All right. And then my favorite, the White Sox. I already alluded to this. Love the White Sox against Ross. Righties who hit righties, all of them. Ross, righty who has problem with righties. It's all White Sox day. It's White Sox day. I love it. They're getting five runs from Vegas. That says a lot. I don't know when the last time the White Sox got five runs was, but if they can hit Darvish and then they can hit the Dodgers bullpen, then guess what? These guys can hit Tyson Ross in the Texas bullpen. So give me both of the Garcias, Avisal and Leroy. Give me Moncada. Give me Abreu. And please don't forget Nicky Delmonico. Nicky D. Nicky Double Dong. Nicky Double Dong. Yeah, man. Yeah, he double donged last night. Nicky D. Guy has been hitting the hell out of the ball. Like, he just doesn't miss. And he's been playing in the five hole for 2,500? Yeah. Yeah, I'm in. I'm into it. Ross, like I said, right-hander struggles with right-handers. So I'm also hopeful that we get Matt Davidson back. He was on the 10-day. He was supposed to be activated for the Dodger series. He wasn't. If he is, then another third baseman who will probably go overlooked is Matt Davidson for ridiculously cheap. I wish we had a real pitcher on this slate because there's so many good cheap stacks that you may not spend all your money. You may not, but you can absolutely attack full four-man stacks in all of your lineups, and I will be doing so tonight. By the way, sorry, all of those right-handers that I mentioned in Chicago, over 200 ISO, over 330 WOBA, all of them. Now, the sample hasn't normalized for Moncada and Nicky D, but pretty good indicator of how talented these guys are. Yes, they strike out at 20% rate, but Ross doesn't have a strikeout rate above 16% in a 400 WOBA to right-handers this year. Favorite stack of the night, hands down. Hands down. The White Sox. I love them. All right. Let's jump over to FanDuel. Let's build a main slate lineup. Spoiler alert, it's Severino, the White Sox, and the Rangers, and it's almost too easy to get everybody that you want in your lineup. Boom, Severino. What did I do? I just clicked on the game on FanDuel. I went position by position, and I picked my favorite guy from each spot. Okay, so the only thing that I was upset about was that I had to go to Abreu over Gallo, which, like, okay, if I could go Gallo, then I would have to go at third base. I mean, if 30, oh, wait, I know what I can do. Hold on. So, well, hold on. Let me read this lineup version first. I got two ideas for you. Okay, so here, Severino, Bob Chirios, Jose Abreu, Yoan Moncada, Adrian Beltre, Elvis Andrus, Avisel Garcia, Nicky Delmonico, and Carlos Gomez. Okay, now if Carlos Gomez isn't in the lineup, then you can go to Sinsu Chu 300. That's fine. But I'm hoping Carlos Gomez is, and people overlook him because he's a righty who smashes righties. He should play for the White Sox. So that's it. Four man of Texas is Chirios, Beltre, Andrus, Gomez. Four man White Sox is Abreu, Moncada, Alvisal Garcia, Nicky Double Dongs. That's it. That is it. Now, how can we adjust, change this stack a little bit? So you can make it a little bit different. You can flip out, you could flip flop Odor, and then you could go down to third base. You could possibly do a little Matt Davidson in there. And then you could upgrade Nicky Delmonico to Leroy Garcia. So then it's Abreu, Davidson, Avisaíl Garcia, Leroy Garcia as your White Sox stack. And your Ranger stack is Odor, Andrews, Gomez, Chirios. Okay. Now, the other way to do this, this was the one that I was alluding to earlier that I thought was kind of fun. Is Gallo at third, and then, hold on, I gotta get back to Gallo at first, Corey Spangenberg at third, right? Nicky D, and then, Nicky D and Sin Soo Chu, or Delino DeShields and Sin Soo Chu, or Delino DeShields and Nicky Delmonico, whatever you want to do there. That works. Actually, Delino DeShields and Nicky Delmonico works great. So then it is Gallo, Odor, Andrews, DeShields, four-man Texas stack. Avisaíl Garcia. Oh wait, no, you can't do that because you can't have Chirios in there as well as your catcher. Well, you'd have to, but Avisaíl Garcia, Nicky Delmonico. You need one more. Well, I could go to Moncada here. There you go. Moncada is my three-man White Sox stack. And then Spangenberg in there at third base, right? A little bit of variance, a little bit of a one-off there to get Corey Spangenberg, who probably against a righty, he was as high as like two or three in the lineup the other night. But he's probably, I think he's batted cleanup now. So we'll see. But it's fun. I'm going to be mixing and matching a whole lot of White Sox, a whole lot of Texas, and some Padres. Give me some, you know, maybe some one-offs from New York or Philadelphia. I'm going to probably do a cross-off on St. Louis, except for Jameson Taillon if that weather clears. So, hey, enjoy the five-game slate. Play some GPPs. Don't get too wrapped up in it. If you want to play some of that, that action on the preseason, there are resources out there. Get out there, find you some preseason resources. Got some Twitter is a buzz, and football stuff is coming along. Hey, by the way, patreon.com/lineuplogic. If you're thinking about getting in there, we're going to be, you know, we still got cheat sheets all the way through August for MLB. But once that football season starts, boy, there's going to be multiple different resources for a football season. We're going to probably have position by position shows, breakdowns. We'll probably have a lineup show. We will be doing cheat sheets that are different, not quite the same as what we saw for MLB. We will be a little bit more like the NBA cheat sheet. But probably with more positional focus and more pricing focus, because we know how important the pricing aspect is of the NBA season. So, of the NFL season. So if you want to get in there, you know, $10 gets you a full month's worth of everything. Also, last but not least, you guys may have seen this on my Twitter feed. You may know via my profile. I'm the editor over at Sleeperbot's blog, The Snooze. Check out some of our content. Great content coming out of our community blog over there at Sleeperbot's The Snooze. So if you're interested, read it. It's fun stuff. There's some good stuff going on over there. Follow us on Sleeperbot on The Snooze. And hey, good luck in your contest tonight, guys. We'll be back at it tomorrow. 15 games, finally, some normal baseball.